Hello and welcome to What's Next in Social Sciences podcast. Thank you so much for tuning into our podcast episodes and for supporting us. This podcast aims to discuss career prospects and challenges for students and early career professionals in social sciences. I'm your host, Archana.
And I'm your co-host, Nirupama. We're actually really excited to bring this episode to you. Archana has had a very happening couple of months. Do you want to talk about it, Archana?
Yeah. So the last 2 months have been crazy for me with my wedding suddenly happening. It was all of a surprise for me, my husband, my parents and my in-laws as well. So given the COVID situation in India, we suddenly thought, let's just, you know, finish this because half of us stay outside of India and we were all in India then. And yeah, I mean, it all happened in a very small, intimate kind of setup at my own house. But then like a few days later, my husband and I contracted COVID. And that was crazy because we were quite sick, but we battled it. So I think it was quite a roller coaster ride for the two of us in the last 2 months. But I'm so glad to be back and also back on the podcast. So it's been crazy, but it's been quite exciting as well, Nirupama.
So yeah, it's been a while since we had a intro to segment. So we decided to do one on one of the most important topics out there, but also perhaps the least understood fields of study and work, which is climate change. And it's something that we must all care about, but a lot of us don't know enough about it. We've hardly thought about it as a career option. So we thought it would be very interesting to talk about this. So Archana, what do you think about, I mean, what do you know about climate change?
Of course, like, you know, in my school and undergrad, I've studied environmental sciences. But then I was actually exposed to the activism side of it during Asian College of Journalism, to be honest, Nirupama, when I remember Professor Nityanand Jayaram, who used to talk so much about the environment.
I actually chose the elective that Nityanand taught. It was called Covering Ecology and Environment. It was such a good course, and it sort of gave me this very socio-political understanding of environmental issues. And that sort of helped me in my work after college when I joined Economic Times. Even though it's a business newspaper, I started reporting on sustainability because I used to work for the city page for Bangalore. So I used to sort of have sustainability as my beat, one of the rare reporters to do that. So in fact, the question of, you know, how we can balance environmental protection and development, you know, the development process, that is one of the burning questions that led me to take up development studies, to start looking for some answers.
You know, I think it is very fascinating, Nirupama, because climate change can be looked at from so many lenses, you know, be it development studies or geopolitics, or it kind of overlaps with each in some way or the other. During my work, I was kind of exposed to climate change from a geopolitics and foreign policy point of view. And climate change has always figured in discussions at the multilateral forums, be it at the Shangri-La Dialogue or like, you know, G20 or G7 summits. And, you know, countries have always kind of ambitiously promised, but then underdeveloped in so many ways. But then they're also competing to reduce carbon emissions. And coming to like South Asia, which I have been studying for some time, I remember in June 2020, there was this large locust attack in India and Pakistan, and that was a serious kind of a wake-up call for the region to come together and, you know, discuss climate change more seriously. Another angle that I think is going to be very upcoming, Nirupama, in climate change is of course, the overlap of technology and environmental studies, because I remember reading this article by the Google CEO Sundar Pichai in The Economist about ways that technology can be used to combat climate change. And I was particularly fascinated by two of his ideas, which were, you know, actually using AI technologies to optimize electricity consumption at large public areas, including shopping malls and airports, which probably will be the norm moving forward. And the second one that he talked about is, like, you know, helping communities adapt to various ways to fight climate change, or rather, you know, use satellite data to understand where problems are during situations like floods in India. Another thing that was, I forget to mention, is that, you know, during the locust attacks in India and Pakistan, I think, like, India used drones to release pesticides in areas where locusts were largely present. And I think governments and countries are also coming up with innovative ways to use technology to combat climate change. And I think that is one area that is going to be very upcoming, or rather, like, a field of study that will be very fascinating moving forward. What do you think, Nirupama?
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking as you were speaking, there might be some people who might be wondering, you know, climate change sounds like something that belongs in the realm of science. You know, why are these people talking about it in a podcast about social sciences and humanities? So in what you said, you actually kind of answered that question partly, because, you know, it's got a lot to do with, you know, countries and societies, you know, how we choose to develop, and, you know, how industries are run and how societies function, how cities function. A lot of this, it's all interlinked. So it's also really a social science.
In today's episode, we have a very special guest. Her name is Shreya Goel. She's a consultant at the PwC in the areas of climate change mitigation, adaptation, risk and vulnerability assessment. Let's hear from her what she's got to say.
I'm Shreya, and I currently work at one of the big fours in the field of climate change advisory. Before this, I did my master's in climate change and sustainability from PISS Bombay. And I did not start off as a climate change person initially, but this was something that I did as part of a career shift. I was a computer science engineer. I passed out from my engineering in around 2014. And after that, I was in another one of the big fours. And during my engineering, I kind of thought ahead, and I was figuring my life out and, you know, what I should do. I was wondering, you know, whether to take an MBA, whether to switch my job, whether to continue here, and just in terms of what my long-term aspirations are. And one of those fields that really, really interested me was the environmental and social sector, and I wanted to do something in this space. I took up a lot of extracurriculars in this field, but it never felt enough, and I thought that I want to pursue something that, you know, not just an extracurricular, but probably full-time. So I took up a correspondence course in the field of renewable energy while I was working, and it clicked. So I took, like, baby steps, and then I just took a final leap of faith and I joined this course at this. 2 years of that, and since then I've been at PwC working as a climate change consultant.
So the course that you did at TIS, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So I did my course during 2017 to 19. And while, you know, how a lot of courses in the field of environment sustainability are a lot more technical, very, very environment, you know, definitions and those kind of courses, this was very different from everything. One, this is a course on climate change and sustainability, which has a lot to do. It is highly interlinked with development and social challenges and all these, and it's a global problem that you have to solve. So it required a lot of understanding of, you know, global political scenario and everything. In the first semester of the course, we did not do anything on the lines of, you know, what environment is, which is very little, very, very basic stuff. But our core focus was on how there was industrialization, what could have led to this high level of energy usage, thereby leading to so much emissions, and everything from a very social sciences context. So that was the thing about this, that it was not just, you know, blind what is happening, but giving you a lot of context as to why these things are happening. And yeah, that was how our first semester went. And from there on, then it got a little more technical every semester. We learned about energy, climate change, what you can do for mitigation. Then core part of climate change is adaptation, that once all these impacts start happening, what do you have in place to reduce the damage that it would cause?
So actually, for a career in climate change, right, what are the master's courses that exist that a person should do? And is it possible for somebody to potentially work in this field without doing a master's in it?
I guess I have come across people who haven't done like a specific master's climate change to be in a climate change field. There are people who come from various development sector masters also, and you know, they find themselves interested in this particular space, because at the end of the day, there are a few skills that are common to across whatever work you're doing. So if you have those skills, you can do this. I would, however, suggest that you have a core understanding of climate change or sustainability and all these things, because if you come from a very outsider perspective without much knowledge, then you don't understand the intricacies. So whether or not you have the time to do a master's program, I would, however, suggest you to go through some of the basics of climate science, understand how this is happening, why this is happening, what are the various challenges that come along with it. Outside this, I know a lot of courses are available which are on climate change, sustainability. So Terry offers a range of courses. There are also courses on sustainability, which have a stronger focus on the corporate sustainability area, which is offered by IIM, NIT, and some of these other colleges.
Okay. So you mentioned that before you started doing your master's, you actually did a course by yourself, right? A correspondence course. What was that?
That was a diploma in renewable energy. So while I was working, I wasn't confident enough of my choice. I mean, I was an engineer. I was working in the field of computer science. Everything seemed quite, you know, laid out for me. Right. To be taking a huge career shift from that to, you know, a place like climate change, which you don't know what is happening. There is very little that you know. There is very little that is told, and not everybody is confident of such choices. So I decided that, you know, at least let me start, take baby steps and see if that it's not just a, you know, like an impulsive decision, but I'll take a thought through this decision, because at least for me, it was a very, very big decision of my life. And it was completely me, like nobody else told me to do it. It's just me that I want to pursue something in this field of work. Mm. So I was looking for correspondence courses that I could do easily along with my job. I did not want to leave my job at that point. So I looked for a lot of courses abroad also, in India also. At the end, finally, somehow the only one that worked out for me at that time was Terry. So all the material would come online. I would do those online classes every weekend. And twice a year for that course, I had to go back. I would go back to Delhi and I would give the exam from the Terry College.
Got it. I'm actually curious to understand if there are any specific, you know, sort of a background that is required to enter climate change and or to get into these master's courses that specialize in climate change. Or, you know, if you need any particular type of skill, like for instance, if you want to do a master's in economics, you need to have good math skills.
So at least from my experience at this, the more I was there, the more I realized that you really did not need to come from any particular background. Our class was a batch of 22 students and we were all so diverse. There was somebody from psychology, there was somebody who'd done hotel management, a lot more engineers. The set was so diverse that I don't think I could generalize. And all of us are doing really well. So at least from a TIS perspective, I wouldn't say that, you know, you need to come from a certain background or any certain background qualifications. The only thing at TIS that you do require is to clear their aptitude exam, which is a lot of GK, a lot of some level, like some basic aptitude questions, and then English, math. Then we have a qualitative exam where we are asked a little more in-depth questions that, you know, our understanding of the global political scenario and some technical details about climate change.
So the next question I have is, you know, what sort of organizations have jobs related to climate change?
So there is a landscape of from, you know, research organizations, implementation organizations, and there are funding organizations, there are government organizations to really on ground, some NGOs who do on ground work. So, and then there are the likes of where I'm working, so consulting organizations. So I was saying that in terms of consulting organizations, you would see these big fours all, they all have a climate change and sustainability services area of work where they have a team dedicated to the sustainability advisory.
Mm.
And what the kind of work we do here is primarily, you know, address the needs of clients, which can vary from public sector, private sector, anybody. And if there's there are any of these companies that want to do something in the sector, we kind of help them prepare a roadmap or develop a strategy for them. Then there are research organizations such as CEW, then there is IRADE. So they also, they do a lot of, their work is a lot more research oriented. They also do a lot of climate change work. Mm-hmm. Then there are funding organizations such as the World Bank, UNDP. They fund a lot of climate change work. So there is some work that goes on at their level also. So there is a range of type of work that is being done in the sector right now. Even a lot of private sector clients that we see are hiring for climate change. So they do a lot of work in the area of climate risk assessment. And they want to understand that what will be the impact of climate change on them and how can they prepare better for these things. So banks, for example, have, you know, there are a lot of banks that have climate risk roles opening up because they want to understand how they'll be impacted and what they can do today to mitigate those risks. I mean, if I look at some of my peers, then there are a few who went into pure research kind of work for any of, let's say, the ministries. So if there is a project related to climate change and the ministry says that, you know, we want to get some of these research done, there are tenders, there are big organizations that take up these kind of studies. And yeah, so that will be a very research type of role. Then there are a lot of students who go for further studies and do their PhD. So then that is more academic. Then there is a lot of on-ground work that is also being done. So where, you know, there are certain implementation activities yet that you do dedicated to a specific region. Mm. That is more primary data collection or primary research work that they do.
Mm, and program implementation.
Yes. Program officers are probably that.
That's great. There is one question that I've been having, right, because I'm really interested in climate change as an important thing that everybody should be worried about. But I'm also, you know, interested in how it is seen by so many people, you know, how climate change denial is a real thing that we see happening around us in many ways, at many levels across the world. So given that, should one be worried about the future of this sector? You know, have you thought about it and what are your thoughts on it?
Yes, I mean, to a certain extent, I am also, you know, worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, it's a perception how the market or how people look at the importance of the work you do. And sometimes you feel really valued, sometimes you don't feel as valued because everybody has different priorities and there are certain businesses that might just really prioritize over profit making at the moment, and there are certain businesses that realize the importance of climate impact, or, you know, they're probably in vulnerable areas and they realize that some of these physical climate impacts on them or some regulatory risks will really impact their profit making or just their general business. So sometimes it feels like a risky place to be in. Sometimes it feels very reassuring to be in that, you know, you're actually doing something that means something to you. So I personally know that the area of sustainability and climate change means something to me, and I feel that there is something that really needs to be done. So yes, there is denial. However, impacts are most likely to get worse in the future, the way we are looking at it and the pace at which we are taking action. So I think that in the future, this will only become a more and more important place to be in.
I completely agree. Regardless of any denial, I'm able to see that, you know, in the last few years, there are more and more people talking about it. And especially, I think, in the developed world, right, it's become something that's yes, discussed much yes, more often.
Correct. And the pure climate change-wise, it is also a historical responsibility that the developed world bears and needs to do a lot more. So that is also there. And the developing world also feels a lot more impact of climate change as compared to the other. So there are a lot of, you know, little things. Once you study climate change, you understand some of this scenario and setting that, you know, who is doing what, why, who needs to do how much. There are a lot of interesting videos on the climate change. So, for example, UNFCCC, IPCC, NASA, they all have some really, really interesting videos that people should see and just improve their knowledge of climate change, if not do something about it. But one step ahead is just, you know, getting awareness and understanding what are the impacts, why is it important.
Okay, great. Is there anything else you would like to say?
How did you come across climate change? What are your views?
Oh, okay. So, you know how we all studied climate change in school, right? I was this very socially responsible kid in school. So I was always really interested in studying about global warming and climate change. And also environmentally conscious. So I would, participate in any essay writing contests or whatnot whenever the topic was related to climate change. Honestly, I think the only proper course that really informed me about climate change I had in TIS as part of the Master's in Development Studies, it's pretty related. You know, if you want to understand development, you also need to understand how can developing countries reach where developed countries are in terms of standard of living, but how can they do that in a sustainable manner, right? Because when developed countries, when they, you know, industrialized, they did not have to worry about the environment. They just did it in a very thoughtless manner, I would say. So it was really interesting. It made me understand the, like you said, the sociopolitics of climate change. And also, it's not really up to individuals. It's, you know, it's not like me and you just being responsible and switching off the fan.
Yes.
But it's more than that. It's like, you know, governments and corporations and entire nations taking decisions and being very strong about the way they act.
Correct. You rightly pointed out that the magnitude of emissions that we're looking at today is not something that you and I could, you know, do something about by just switching off our fans. That becomes a part of it. Right now, we're looking at a very top-down approach that is really needed, where regulatory measures can be taken and, you know, breakthrough technologies could do something about what we are facing right now. And interestingly, like you said that, you know, when you were in school and you studied about these things, you were one of the responsible children. I think the root of environmental awareness and this consciousness was also seeded in me when I was a child. Since then, I've always been interested, but when you're in school, you don't know that if this is a place where you can pursue a career or anything. Yeah. At that time, this was not something you would ever imagine that, okay, in my life, I will do something in these lines, because you have no idea.
Exactly. And yeah, I think even a lot of people, even when they do their undergrad, might not really realize that such courses exist and, you know, that there could be a career in, you know, an area like climate change. So which is why I thought it was very important to talk to somebody who's working in this. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for bringing me over and having this conversation.
I think she's raised some very important and valid points, Nirupama, and thank you so much for speaking to her.
I actually really enjoyed having this conversation with her. So she has a friend from college for me, but we haven't actually had this conversation where we sat and discussed climate change. And I'm actually really glad that we got to understand from a person who works in this field, you know, what it is like to be dealing with climate change denial. As she pointed out, this is a field that is going to get more and more important in the future. So it's something that I wish more people start understanding, you know, while they are in school or while they are doing their undergrad, and, you know, more people start considering a career in climate change.
Well, on that concluding note, just like with every other episode, we have put out some additional helpful resources in our blog at @whatsnextpod on Medium. We'd also love to work on topics that you guys suggest, so please do send in your requests. I also quickly want to point out that in 2020 June, Nirupama and I came up with the podcast idea first, and it is almost the end of June 2021, and I'm so glad we are still on the podcast. I hope this podcast helps a lot of people. I hope, like, you know, you can also share it with you know, people whom you think will find this podcast helpful.
Yay, it's been a year.
It has.
I'm really happy that we've been able to come so far, and you know, we've heard from so many people who listen to the podcast saying that they found the content really useful, and you know, that's just so nice to hear. So yeah, if you listen to this podcast, please take a moment to send us what you think. As always, I'm here with the disclaimer. The thoughts and ideas that we share in this podcast are our own, Arjuna's and mine, and we do not represent the institution or organization that we work for. For more such resourceful episodes on social sciences and humanities, click follow on Spotify or Google Podcasts or whichever app you get your podcasts on. Reach out to us if you have any queries. You can always find our LinkedIn profiles in our blogs. If you liked what you heard, share it on social media and spread the word. Thank you so much for tuning in.